recently, our company softball team lost the big game by one run. Then Dale tried to console us with the quote, "Winning isn't everything." Dale's a loser. I play to win, like early payout from Bet365. If my team goes up big, I get paid out instantly, even if they blow the lead later.
Sound familiar, Dale?
Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only. Our yoga instructor challenged us to find inner peace. I found it faster than anyone. After 4 seconds, I stood up and screamed,
"I found Nirvana! I win!"
They asked me to leave. I guess they don't respect winning. Bet365 does, though. New customers get $200 in bonus bets just for betting $10. Namaste, losers. Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 1025-1063 The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie, Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Finnegan here with you. I'm taking your thoughts all show long on your predictions for Black Monday as it relates to the Tennessee Titans. Do we see any major changes? We will discuss that throughout the show. But Adam in Portland is on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. He wants to talk Shedeur Sanders. Adam, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Hey, I just wanted to add, he's got no big marquee wins. Colorado in the past 2 years hasn't beat a top 25 team. They've got no wins against teams over 500. To say he's a good quarterback and makes the throws is fine, but to call him a winner, I just don't think is right.
Thanks, Adam.
Hey, Adam, where was this program at before he and his dad? Yeah, huh?
Adam's gone.
Oh, no. I'm just saying, this is like a rhetorical question.
Okay. Yeah.
Where was this Colorado
before
team?
Before he got there?
Before, let's just say, before Shedeur Sanders became the quarterback of the Colorado Buffaloes. We're not talking about the old days when they won a national championship, you know, when Rashawn Salaam was there and all those guys, Westbrook and those. We're not talking about those years. We're talking about the very lean years, as it has been for the last decade or so. Where were they before Shedeur Sanders actually stepped on campus? I'm going to answer that question for you. They didn't win nothing. Literally, they didn't win anything. The minute he comes into that conference along with Deion's, his dad, Deion Sanders, and some other players, mainly Travis Hunter as well, this team, they improve each and every year. Coach Sanders, his son, Travis Hunter, they're there. They improve dramatically, not just on the field, but also in admissions. Why? Because of those two people or those three individuals. So to me, regardless of who they play, they play some tough. They lost three games this year. Well, if you count the bowl game, you figure four. They lost three games this year, okay? You can't sit here and say it was because of Shedeur Sanders that they lost. Hell, they can't block for him half the time, and he's escaping and eluding blockers, pass rushers, more times than he's not. And then he's finding guys down the field to throw the football to. He's buying time within the pocket. He's playing winning football. That's what I should have said. I am sorry for the lack of communication in regards to that. He plays winning football. But just because you play winning football doesn't mean you're always going to win. So let me rephrase that. Shedeur Sanders has played, since I've watched him, going back to Jackson State and now, he's played winning football 90-something percent of the time. That's just who he is. That's basically the guys that have been drafted in the first round or the top three or four in the last 10 years. Not to say they haven't lost, but C.J. Stroud, even when they lost, even when they lost last year or 2 years ago in college, he played winning football. Bryce Young, whenever they lost, he played winning football. Look at these quarterbacks. They play winning football, but it doesn't necessarily mean their team is going to win. Shedeur Sanders, ever since I've watched him, he's played winning football. I don't know why people can't get that through their heads. Like, the kid is a good player. He's worthy of a first-round pick.
Right. I think there's also the other side where you look at a guy who had all of these wins in college, right? A.J. McCarron. Like, there's a lot of guys who played for powerful programs that did win and have great wins over top 25 teams and, you know, championships. But that's not always what translates to the NFL. That's the mystery. That's why we spend so many hours debating on who is going to translate, because there is no one formula that works.
And you put Shedeur Sanders behind Georgia's offensive line, not the one last night, but the one prior to that. He's a winning quarterback.
Yes,
100%
I would agree with that. I would agree with that. And I think a little bit of Jay Cutler when I watch Shedeur Sanders, only in that Jay Cutler had so little surrounding him. He was constantly under pressure. He was getting hammered, right? But you could see the flashes of greatness and how he elevated everybody. He did get some big wins, but he never got Vanderbilt to a bowl game. So if you just went on wins, then you would say, well, hey, why would you take Jay Cutler over Matt Leinart? But Jay Cutler was a way better NFL quarterback than Matt Leinart, as it turned out, right? Because like you're saying, you can't always measure in just wins. There's so many other variables that are going into it.
So we'll see what happens if the Titans have the opportunity to draft Shedeur Sanders. They could. Right now, they are slated to have the number 2 pick in the NFL draft, right behind the New England Patriots. And we'll talk in the next hour about the number 1 pick scenarios based on the action around the league on Saturday and Sunday. But the question a lot of Titans fans want to know is, who is going to be picking Shedeur Sanders possibly with that number 2 pick? Will it be Rand Carthon? Will it be somebody else? And the lines have been drawn, I feel like, on this station. Willie and Derek, you both believe, and please correct me if I'm misrepresenting your comments, you both believe that Rand Carthon deserves at least one more year. Now, if things go awry next season, they might need to make a change. But you both believe that Rand Carthon should return as Titans general manager next year, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. We know where Jared stands on this. He's been abundantly clear about this since the beginning. Robbie Stanley, I believe, Chase McCabe, Big Joe Dubin, they are on the side of making a change at GM. I'm not sure where Rex Rhode stands on things. I haven't made my opinion. I'm still thinking about it. Maybe by the end of the show, I'll make a declaration one way or the other.
Well, you better decide quick. It's honest.
I know. I've got less than 2 hours.
Can I just make this declaration here while we're sitting there going, should they change? Should they not? If they were to change, all of the groundwork that has been laid, you're completely scrapping, and you don't know who's going to be next. You're bringing in a whole new group of people who have to get ready for a draft that is in just a few months. That puts them behind the eight ball in a big way, in my opinion. You've got this team of people that you entrusted not very long ago at all, that's really only had one draft as a group. So that is my argument. You've got this whole system that you took pride in telling everybody that this is the way to go. The first draft wasn't that bad, right? It's not like they just had an awful draft. I think there's encouraging things about this draft to some degree. It's not a bad draft. It could have been better, but it certainly wasn't, you know, terrible by any stretch. So this whole thing just changed the cards. Like, we're not playing card sharks where you just get another card. Who are the new people? Who are these people you want to put in charge? How long
they
are you
going
to take to go get these people? I mean, yeah.
They don't know.
Well, Jared, because Jared is what's the word I'm looking for here? The person, who's the person that leads a parade? What's the official name for that? I don't remember.
The ringleader.
Well, that's a circus. Yeah, but circus. We'll go with the ringleader.
Let's go with it.
Ringleader is perfect because, you know, still in the company can be a circus sometimes. Jared is the ringleader of the anti-Ran crew. He has mentioned multiple general managers with experience, such as Rick Spielman or Thomas Dimitroff or Mark Dominic. And sometimes I like to give him some crap for that because he likes those guys. I think he's had him on his SiriusXM show. He's had him on his own program, you know. But you know, clearly.
But he acts like those guys have never screwed up
before.
Yeah. Before. Those guys are perfect.
Well,
those guys have been fine, but they have been in and out of the jobs just like everybody. I mean, there is no perfect guy that's just going to come in and be the magical solution to everything. But the solution can't always be, this guy, it's not going right now, so let's change.
Well, Derek.
That to me is why you've got to try to stay the course for another year. In another year, we'll talk about it. But they just started this regime. They inherited so many of the problems.
Yes. The other thing as well that we talk about, history would suggest that if the Titans make a change, it's probably going to be someone getting their first crack at being a general manager, right? We talk about this a lot. There aren't a lot of retreads in the NFL when it comes to general managers. Willie, you know this as well as I do. In the NHL, the same five or six guys get cycled through all of those positions. In the NFL, correct me if I'm wrong, that is not as prevalent. Oftentimes, it's a situation with, like Rand Carthon. Rand Carthon gets his first opportunity. John Robinson got his first opportunity. So perhaps there is a football person, quote unquote, who is part of a front office, an experienced football person. But Derek, wouldn't you think that if the Titans make a change at general manager, it's more likely to be someone getting their first shot at it versus someone who has experience in that position?
It seems like that's the way that NFL teams choose to go with a first-time guy, an up-and-coming young guy. Very seldom do you see a retread on GMs. And not to say that there shouldn't be. I think there are some GMs that have done good jobs. And like Willie said, every GM doesn't hit. We get that. And that goes for Rand Carthon as well. But it seems like that, you know, after a year, it's like, even though you know GMs, more than likely they're going to have a failing success rate, because that's just the job. The job is meant to have a failing success rate. You just hope that you hit on two or three of them, mainly the quarterback.
Exactly, the quarterback.
You know, if you hit on a quarterback, you're good.
If had a good year, then we would look at this regime as, hey, okay, they're moving in the right direction. You know, it's so much has been influenced by the fact that Will Levis has completely crashed and burned, which was not something you could see coming. Did anybody think he would be this bad?
Nobody thought he would be this bad. And for those that say, yeah, they're lying to themselves. The season Now, you may not have agreed with Amy when she said young and exciting.
Right. There was plenty of skepticism about Will Levis's ability to be a starting quarterback.
Question.
But nobody could have predicted how I was about to combine terrible and awful to toffle.
Yeah,
how,
say it. How toffle.
How toffle this quarterback was going to be this season. But that – so anyway, please continue.
But it happened. And to me, every GM, and listen, I can ask Jerry, and it wouldn't be fair to Jared nor Rex nor anyone else personality on this airwaves to say, well, who would you name as GM? Because 9 times out of 10, nobody's sitting there going home and said, okay, let me scout all these GMs, their pros and their cons, and put them on, and then these are the guys that I'm going to push for. Nobody's doing that. But you usually what comes out of your head is guys that you're familiar with. Like Jared, he brings up those two or three names. Why? Because he's familiar with those guys. You look at Rick Spielman. Now, Rick Spielman's the same person that drafted Ponder, wasn't it? He was the same person that drafted Ponder, the quarterback.
Rick Spielman?
Yeah, I believe he was the same guy that drafted Ponder in the top. I don't know. What was Ponder, a top 10
pick? Top 10.
That is correct.
Yeah, so
Spielman did draft Christian Ponder.
Exactly. So you drafted Christian Ponder as your quarterback. And how did that go? Yeah, as a matter of fact, you don't even need to answer it. So every GM has their warts. Whether it's 5 guys, 10 guys, 15 guys, if you stay on the job long enough, you're going to have more misses than hits. Now, listen, Rand and the regime, yes, they need to start getting some hits, at least one, possibly two, in the next draft coming up. but they need to also hit when they go into free agency as well. Be smart in the guys that you bring in, not necessarily for a shock and awe factor, but bring guys in that fits the culture that you're establishing. They may not be the A1 guys, but if they fit your culture, they play within the parameters that you want to play within, you will have a winning team. You don't need to have marquee guys. You need to have the quarterback, but you don't need to have marquee guys across the board. Look at New England. Outside of probably one or two people, can y'all name me superstars on a New England team that won Super Bowls? No, stop it. You can't even do it. Randy Moss, they didn't win a Super Bowl, okay, with that team. There was no flat-out superstars. Corey Dillon was a superstar, but he was toward the end of his career when he won a Super Bowl with New England. So the one thing you do need is a quarterback, but you just need people that are going to fit inside your system. Bill Belichick said this on that
on McAfee.
He said, listen, when you bring in guys, you got to bring in guys that fit your system, that fits your culture. He talked about the Pittsburgh Steelers. He basically said, man, Pittsburgh are bringing the same guys over and over
for 30 years
yeah. on defense. Why? Because there's a culture set and there's specific people that they are looking for. And what happens with Pittsburgh? Damn near they figure it out. They damn near hit every time they go out and get somebody on defense. Why? Because they have a culture built. So they go get those players. You don't have to be an A1 guy, but if you fit our culture, we can work with you. That's what the Titans, they must do this offseason. Whatever that culture is that they're setting, whatever it is, they need to find guys that fit that and not go look for the splash guys.
Willie, we do have a texter who would like to ask you a question. An unnamed texter says, Willie, you can argue it's their first draft, but this is Carthon's second year, and choosing him because you don't know who is next is a lazy excuse to not move forward. Rand has ultimately made this team worse, and you are blaming the roster on someone who hasn't been employed for over 2 years. Your response.
Willie, can I take that one?
I mean, have I not answered that 50 times?
Exactly.
We've gone through the drafts of 2020 through 2022 that were not Rand Carthon's drafts, and that has come up with zero. That's given them no foundational players at all. He inherited all of that. And they did come in. They took the swing on Will Levis, which was a reasonable move that has crashed and burned. But you try. That doesn't mean you're a bad GM when you take a swing and it doesn't work. That's what I don't think people really understand, is you need a little bit of good fortune here. And when you all the things that D-Mace just said, I think are really important. How are you going to build a culture if you're changing it after a year and a half? Like, Rand Carthon's been there for 2 years, but it was really the Vrabel regime that was the first year, and Chad Brinker was really more on the outside, and you were working into Vrabel's culture. This past year was the first year of, this is what we want to try to do.
But people don't
want
to hear that, Willie.
Willie,
people don't want to hear that. That makes too much sense, man. That makes too much sense. Nobody wants to hear that.
They just think that anybody else would be better. That's the mentality that I
think. Yeah, that's what they want to hear.
The texter is saying, because they're 3-14, anybody else would be better. And I just think that is very short-sighted.
Again, I think we, at least on this show, I can't talk about other shows, even though they are great. I can't really get into the other shows that we have on this station. They're wonderful. But at least this show, we have been chronicling how they got in this situation. And no matter how many times we tell y'all or tell some of you, you don't hear it. It's like, again, it didn't take them 2 years to get here or a year to get here. And I'm going to say this very slow. It didn't take 2 years for them to get here. It's not going to take 2 years for them to get out of it. I understand the fan base, right. And you have every right to be frustrated. I get that part. But also, you got to understand that when football teams become this bad, this quick, it's not because, it just happened yesterday. When the football team becomes this bad, there was an erosion. Didn't nobody pay attention to or
right.
Didn't nobody talk about because what they were winning some games and then all
yes,
of a sudden
and they had an aging roster
exactly.
And then how about this, D-Mace? Here's what we haven't mentioned today that's got zero to do with Rand Carthon. AJ Brown trade. That is a crushing
oh, they
trade.
Don't want to put that on anybody.
Crushing
they don't
trade.
Want to put it on J-Rob, and they don't want to put it on Vrabel. They don't want to
yeah,
do that.
But
that was the owner.
See is, Since Rand Carthon became GM, the record is 9-whatever, right? That's the only story people want you to focus on if they're trying to move on. They don't pay attention to the other, all the stuff that we just mentioned. But think about the ramifications only of the A.J. Brown trade. An absolute crippler, right? That is, you can't even quantify how badly that has gone.
Yeah, you traded a A1 player for a question mark, which means an unknown. It's like, I don't know which. Hopefully you turn out to be a good player.
Yeah, well, now we know.
Now we know the
answer,
yes. But you traded a A1 player, a pro bowler, a potential all-pro for a question mark. That wasn't Rand Carthon, but that move was, and at the time people were saying this, like that was a bad move. Now all of a sudden people want to forget about it and say, well, he had 2 years to get it together. Well, the guy that they drafted didn't get it. He wasn't he didn't fill the gap or fill the void that was left when y'all traded away a all-pro guy. So it takes time to get over that. I'm not making an excuse. It's just reality, okay? If you want to say me speaking reality is a excuse, then I will take that. I am making an excuse, but what I am doing is preaching to you reality. This is the reality of the situation. The Tennessee Titans didn't get here just by happenstance. This is, and it wasn't all right. Now, what I do fought Rand Carthon for is the right tackle. And we've talked about that. I fought him for that right tackle. He should have known. We need to get somebody. I don't care who it is. We need to go outside. Even if we got to overpay, we need to go get somebody. But you didn't. So, yes, that one is on your hands.
I do have one piece of Titans breaking news to share with all of you. Brian Callahan has announced that Will Levis will start Sunday against the Texans. Mason Rudolph will also play because earlier in the week, Brian Callahan said the plan is for both quarterbacks to play. But according to Brian Callahan just now, Will Levis will start Sunday's regular season finale against the Houston Texans. Your thoughts?
He's able to do it. Why? Because when the question was asked of him when he benched Will Levis, he never said this was definite. He never said that. That was smart because he knew probably I'm going to have to go back to Will Levis if it's because of injury or what else. I may have to go back to Will Levis if Mason Rudolph plays horribly.
Willie finds this comical. Willie, your thoughts?
I don't know.
But Willie, you can say he covered his tail because he never said Will Levis wasn't getting back in the game.
I have to ask. I don't know the answer. I do wonder if somebody above Brian Callahan said put him back in.
I think that's what I do.
I just wonder.
I would truly believe that it wasn't Brian Callahan that said we're going to throw Will Levis back in there. He wasn't.
And how does the team think? What does the team think of that? I don't. I know Mason Rudolph didn't exactly light the world on fire the last couple of weeks, but I do think you're not sitting there wondering when. And it's not like he didn't throw interceptions either, right? But I think you had a little bit of better sense of what the offense was going to look like. I do wonder how the team feels about this move. But, hey, you Will Levis, you can't
also,
ever argue.
Also, via Teron Davenport.
They didn't give you a chance. Right?
Also, via Teron Davenport, if Levis is playing – well, this is from Brian Callahan. If Levis is playing well and he's feeling it, I'll let him keep playing.
Oh,
He was feeling it until he turned it over three
exactly.
straight times.
Here's my conspiracy. All right. On this.
And then we got to get to Ask D-Mace. Yeah, so let's get your conspiracy.
Here's my conspiracy is that because you remember we talked about is Will Levis getting back in the game. And he said the only reason he's going to get back in the game is somebody above him say hey, you getting back in the game. Here's my theory. You walked into there and I said they got to convince Amy of some things and you got to make it seem like it's her idea that it happens. They went in there, and they probably convinced her, let's play Will Levis. Let's do it. He gives us the best opportunity to win, knowing that that's not the case. Yeah.
Now watch. He'll throw four touchdown passes in a game that doesn't mean anything.
It's going to be
win.
The Atlanta game all over again. Seven. Yep, yeah. That's exactly.
He's
going
to give us the best shot at winning.
They were wearing the Oilers uniforms when he had the great game against the Falcons.
Yeah, you're right.
And threw the four touchdowns.
Yeah,
I didn't even realize that. That is true. So the breaking news, according to Brian Callahan, Will Levis will start the Titans' regular season finale against the Houston Texans on Sunday. Mason Rudolph will also play, but Brian Callahan did say if Levis is feeling it, Man. He's staying in there. So what are your thoughts about that quickly? One texter says, watch Will Levis go in and absolutely crush the Texans and ruin our draft. Right. That's the
that
Titans
very tight.
Nightmare
that would be so
scenario. 615-737-1025. It's time for Ask D-Mace. We'll do that next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, the game.
G-Mace. He played 15 years in the NFL.
A quick throw. Touchdown, Derek Mason.
He had over 12,000 receiving yards.
Midfield, and there he goes. 80 yards for the touchdown.
And now you can ask him anything. Have a question about football or life? Now's your time to ask D-Mace.
We'll welcome you in.
Now.
D-Mace.
On 102.5 and 106.3, The Game and the Game Nashville app.
D-Mace, Vingan and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Willie Donick is headed to Morning Skate. The Nashville Predators taking on the Vancouver Canucks tonight. Puck drop at 9, pregame at 8, right here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. I will be filling in for Robbie Stanley on pregame tonight, starting at 8 o'clock. I got to get my super nitro cold brew energy, something or other, because it's going to be a late night
pump
for
that
me.
Caffeine, brother.
Yes, absolutely. But it is time to ask D-Mace. So let's do that now. Let's start with – I always hate when this happens. I like that people text in, obviously. But when you text in, it moves people's texts down. All right, here we go. Devin and Dixon says, D-Mace, as a former player who played on a team that had Nick Saban as an assistant coach, what is your favorite memory of playing under Nick Saban?
Nick was a head coach at Michigan State. There were a lot of memorable things about Coach Saban. I just, because you got to understand, we had George Perlis, who was, a fixture at Michigan State. They loved him at State. When you thought of Michigan State, you thought of two people, Perlis and Judd Heathcote. Heathcote was the basketball coach, and obviously Perlis was the football coach, and then Perlis gets fired. You bring in a young, vibrant, pee and vinegar type of coach. He comes in and he rearranges everything. This is his place. He comes in his meeting. And one thing I remember, and it wasn't necessarily Nick Saban, but it was a Nick Saban hire, the strength coach, Ken Manny, wonderful person. Ken Manny, God, he's like one of those experts in that realm of weightlifting and programming and all of that stuff. Ken Manny came into it. And Ken Manny, y'all used to watch Beavis and Butthead, right? You remember the dude, the sergeant was like, kick me.
Yes.
That guy?
Yes.
That was Ken Manny. That was Ken Manny. Ken Manny walks in the first day. He's yelling and screaming. And he says, fellas, I went in my locker room and I did number one on every wall in this locker room to mark my territory. And everybody was looking at Coach Manning like he was crazy. Well, come to find out, Coach Manning was crazy.
Did he actually do it?
Yes, Coach Manning did that. But Coach Manning was the greatest, man, because he loved his players, but he pushed us extremely hard. Like, I don't think we had been pushed that hard in the prior 2 years. Not to say Coach Manning didn't do it, me and Coach Perlis didn't do, but the weight room staff was a little lax because they had been there for a long time. But Coach Manning came in there and he rearranged everything.
And peed all over it, apparently.
Yeah. And, but guys loved him. Guys loved him. So that's one of the things that I remember about a Coach Saban-led team, how he brought guys in, pro guys, guys that, knew the program, guys that there was a vision. Everybody bought into the vision. And if you didn't buy into the vision, you were out of there. I seen him run people out of there. My best friend, he didn't want to play no more, because Coach Saban was just, he rode you hard. And he got people out of that program. But then he also loved on those that chose to stay. But he always made it his point, meaning Coach Saban, to be there. Even if he sort of ran you out of the program in a sense, he didn't turn his back. he still allowed you to keep your scholarship? Because I know two guys that chose not to play, but Coach Saban allowed them to keep their scholarships. So stuff like that that Coach Saban did. He talked about, you know, what he did for Musin Muhammad. He talks about that all the time. So it's just things like that that Coach Saban was able to do. I guarantee you talk to Alabama players now, they will say, hey, listen, Coach Saban was hard, but man, oh, man, you know, he was there. He was there for us. He loved on us, and he probably was the best coach a lot of them ever had.
So you're telling me this strength coach peed all over the locker room?
On those walls.
That's a lot of urine, my man.
Hey, man, that was Coach Manny. It's Coach Manny for you.
Oh, man.
Coach Manny's great,
though. You couldn't get away with that stuff these days.
I mean, you could.
I mean, you could try.
I think you still do it. I mean, what they going to do to you?
All right, well, you know what you need to do? Chris Sanders, if you're listening, next football season, I want you to go in your locker room and pee all over the walls and see what happens.
You probably can't do it in high school, but yeah. Beyond that,
that sounds
amazing.
Like yes. there'd be a news story.
Exactly.
Exactly. That's my point. Jack is from East Nashville, my side of town. Jack, thank you for calling. Go ahead with your question for Derek.
Happy New Year, fellas.
You as well.
If you're on one of these teams and your stars get held out, they get the week off, so to speak, saving them for a playoff game, if you're the rest of the guys that got to go on working, hitting the clock, and going right on, does that bug some people? Does everybody buy in? How'd that go over, D-Mace?
Thanks, Jack.
Thank you, Jack, for the question. I think it goes over well with guys, with individuals, because here's the deal, is that when guys sit this time of year, it gives other guys opportunity to play. And say that, you know, guy that's second or third on the depth chart, more so third on the depth chart, now he gets an opportunity to play, whether it be a wide receiver, quarterback, linebacker, cornerback. He gets an opportunity to play. You don't mind it because you bought into the process. And a part of the process is winning enough games to where you get a first-round bye, and that last game, you possibly can rest some more of your guys that are banged up. So guys that aren't playing don't look at that as, man, why they don't have to play and we have to play. No, we look at it the other way, because I've been there. I've been the third guy on the depth chart, and guys got taken out of the game because it was like, we were up so many points or we're down so many points. Get in. That's an advantage. That's an opportunity for me as a player. So we enjoy stuff like that, guys that are backups when the starters are not playing, because this gives us an opportunity to show that we've been working hard and we've been preparing, and now our preparation has put us in this position where now we can go out there and play.
Eric is on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Eric, thank you for calling. Let's hear your dad joke and your question for Derek.
Well, the thing is, I had to make sure, guys, in the past I've called with a dad joke, and there were two times I got a screen that they said was no. I had to get this one screened, but they said this one's okay, so I hope you like it.
Let's go.
What do you get when you cross an elephant with a rhinoceros?
An elephant with a rhinoceros. Hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you get?
L, if I know.
okay.
Not
I don't
bad.
Know if my kids would have thought that was funny. That's what it's supposed to happen, right?
That's what the
dad
kids
joke.
Don't
yes.
think these are funny.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, first of all, about the game, son, I had planned to go to game Sunday. Now with the weather, I don't know, because in fact, I got for Christmas a brand new Titans poncho that my brother gifted me for Christmas, had custom made everything. I've already people seen it and liked it. Asked a question about it. A couple people took pictures of it, put on Instagram pages and stuff, guys. So I don't know if I get to wear it because of the weather. But the thing I want to ask you is this. We talked about Titans coaching changes on staff and all that type of stuff. One obvious change to me that I've got to happen, does not be shocked, is, of course, the special teams coach, Coach Anderson, because they've been talked about, you know, even though it's gotten better over the last few weeks, some people think he will be gone, some think he'll be back. Just want to get your thoughts on that. Was that definitely a change you would make, or do you think over the last weeks he's done enough to save his job? Guys, Happy New Year to you. Y'all take care. We'll talk to you soon.
You as well, Eric. So Colt Anderson, I think, Derek, it certainly seems like the quote-unquote easiest decision to make for the Titans if someone's head is going to roll for this season. I know, as Eric mentioned, the special teams have gotten a little bit better over the past several weeks, but it's reminiscent of the conversation we had about Will Levis, that when he came back into the lineup after he was injured and he was playing solid football, I think we were lulled into a false sense of security, for lack of a better term, because he wasn't playing as poorly as he did at the beginning of the season. And I'm wondering, and you are the expert, but I'm wondering if the special teams is a similar situation because they're not having the huge blunders that special teams unit was having at the beginning of the season. You know, have they made significant progress, and do you think Colt Anderson survives Black Monday?
Well, Brian Callahan spoke on this. It may have been a couple of weeks ago, and he talked about how the special teams unit was improving. And based upon what had been happening in previous weeks, yes, they were improving, and they have improved, somewhat as the season has gone on. But the special teams is just an indicative. It's just indicative of the roster, man. That's what it is. And I don't know how better to tell people. When your roster isn't good, your special teams is going to suffer. Now, listen, they have one of the best place kickers in the National Football League. You got to get the punter. You know, I think him breaking his leg, I think that really did something to his psyche. Maybe next year is a little bit better, we hope. But I do believe that injury messed with him, and maybe he's just not fully over it just yet. Now, the coverage teams have gotten better, and the return teams, they've gotten better because they've been able to catch the football. That's sad to even say. You got better because you can hold on to the football, not necessarily catch it, but hold on to it. We understand DeQuan Jackson had his issues with not catching the football but holding on to it. Once he got hit. So you look at all that and you say, well, yeah, he has improved, but has he improved enough to keep his job? I'm not sure. The way this season has went, we all know that there has to be a fall guy, a scapegoat somewhere somehow, because you just can't have a season this bad and everybody come back. There has to be changes somewhere. And it seems like the obvious change would be the special teams coach. But I guarantee you, if this roster gets better, even with Colt Anderson as your special teams coach, they're going to get better. But I don't think they have time to do that. I don't think they have the leeway to keep Colt Anderson again. With the way that the fan base has been going at this team, I don't think they can afford to keep him another year. So he may just as well be the guy that's a sacrificial lamb.
615-737-1025. We've got phones. We've got texts. We will continue the conversation with Ask D. Mace coming up next. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, 1063, The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025, 1063, The Game. A little black box bringing us back. Thanks for doing that for me, David James. Although you were asking Derek what he wanted to listen to, and then I said, this is what I want to listen to.
Yeah, even though it's
Ask D-Mace. Matt is on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Matt, thank you for holding. Thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Thanks, guys. Long-time listener, D-Mace. You were a hell of a player, man. Big fan.
Thank you. Thank you, Matt. I appreciate it.
Hey, so question. You know, I'm a absolute college fanatic. I'll eat, live, sleep college football. How if Travis Hunter is sitting there at second, if he's available, how do you pass on a generational talent guaranteed to be a 10-year starter, wants to play 20 snaps on the offense? And what the hell? I mean, we would get two players for the price of one, and we'd get a receiver that if we lined him up on offense, probably the second would be number two right now as a rookie. How do you pass on a generational talent like Travis Hunter, an absolute no miss for really, I mean, I look at Shador. I look at Cam Ward. I don't see it. I mean, I think possibilities that either one of those could be a miss. You get baggage with Shador. Cam Ward says, nah, I'm just not going to play the second half. I don't care about what. That speaks volumes.
Thank you, Matt. Appreciate it. Okay, you're right about Travis Hunter. I mean, he's the best prospect. Now, will he get drafted number one? I don't know. But if you're just talking about the number one prospect in this year's draft, he is the number one prospect in this year's draft. If you're sitting at number two or possibly even number one, if you're the Titans, if I'm sitting at number one, I'm trading out of it. As much as I love Travis Hunter, somebody else loves him even more, which means I can fleece them for a bunch of picks. Because I need to build my roster up. So if I got the number one pick and possibly even the number two pick, depending on who's picking number one, I may move out of that number two spot. But if there's not a team willing to pay what it's going to cost to move up to that one or two spots, then, yeah, how could you pass up on a Travis Hunter? Because I'm assuming whoever's number one, outside of New England, they'll probably end up drafting a quarterback, or they'll try to do what you would try to do, is to trade out of it no further than probably three or four and get a bunch of picks. So, but if I'm two or three, it's hard to pass up Travis Hunter unless somebody's giving you a buttload for him.
What do you mean? We've talked about this a little bit, about players playing both sides of the ball at this stage. I mean, in this era of football, do you think that whichever team drafts Travis Hunter, he's going to say, I want to play on both sides of the ball? I remember a few weeks ago, we looked at Deion Sanders. Mm-hmm. Speaking of Deion Sanders, and we looked at the impact that he had on both sides of the ball. It was negligible. I mean, not negligible. It was minimal. Minimal is the right term. It was minimal. He did do both, mm-hmm. but his offensive impact paled in comparison to his defensive impact.
Exactly.
So if you were a coach of the team that drafts Travis Hunter, which side of the ball are you playing him on?
I put him on the defensive side of the ball first, and then design plays, packages for him. I don't want him to play no more than 10, 15 plays on offense. Depending on how the game's going, he possibly could get more on offense. If our defense is getting three and outs, then I could put him a little bit more on offense, depending on the package. But listen, this game, people look at Deion Sanders and they just think, you know, he played all these plays on offense. He played all these plays. No, he didn't. His best season, he barely had over 400 yards, a couple of touchdowns. And that was, they won a championship with the Cowboys that year, I believe. But he wasn't like this, you know, 30, 35 play guy on offense. He just wasn't. He was more like the 10, maybe 12 plays, but those plays were specific to him and him only.
In 1996, he had 36 receptions for 475 yards mm-hmm. and one touchdown.
Yeah, so that's basically fourth receiver numbers. That's just what it is. And we believe that Deion Sanders, you know, and he did. He played, whether it be offense or defense, more and specialties, he played it at a high level. But he knew he couldn't play 40, 50 snaps of offense and then turn back around and do that many on defense. Now, the NFL has changed. I will say that. The NFL has changed. The thing that I hate the most is that these wide receivers coming in and out of the game, they go three plays, then they tap their head and go stand on the sideline. They get a deep ball, they tap their head and go stand on the sidelines. Like, dude, get your butt back in the huddle, all right? Take a deep breath, two of them, and then get back out there. But because of the way the NFL is, and they are so in tune of, you know, how many plays guys run, the temperature when they're running, the speed, all this, is their nose running, do they have a headache? They're in tune with all these, with all this mechanical stuff that they have on them, all this science, that I think with Travis Hunter, you can do it, but not for a long time. If you are going to do it, you better do it within his first 3 or 4 years, okay? If you're going to play him a lot on both on offense, do it his first 3 or 4 years. Because after that, really his first 2 years. Because after that, his body will get beat up just because of the nature of the business. His body will get beat up because not only are they going to put him on offense or defense, he's going to play special teams. He's going to be a returner in the National Football League, whether it's punt or kickoff return. Deion Sanders has already said that. He said, man, if I put him at punt return, he would have been an All-American at punt return. But they didn't because they had guys that can do that. So he's going to be another guy that can play special teams, defense, and offense, but just trying to minimize him to the things that he does on the offensive side of the ball. 20 snaps, possibly 15. No, anywhere from 10 to 15 snaps on offense, great, but you are my primary cornerback and my primary punt returner.
Doug is on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Doug, thank you for calling. Thank you for waiting. Please go ahead.
Happy New Year's, man.
You too.
Happy New Year's.
You're talking about bad players and this team not having enough dudes. On the subject of Colt Anderson, he may pack his bags and bounce because there's not enough Popeye spinach around to make dudes for special teams. It wasn't always about him. I'm looking at guys out of zones, out of lanes, not able to tackle. It wasn't all about him. So he could be the fall guy, but he may pack his bags in the middle of the night and say, yeah, I'm not going to let y'all tarnish my resume. I'm up out of here.
Thanks, Doug.
And thank you, Doug. I'm glad you said that because I think I've said this like months ago. Like, listen, all these problems that they're having on special teams, because people want to talk about the problems, but then they don't want to go back and look at the actual film and what happened. Do it all the time. I guarantee you, I ask anybody on this show, not this show, but on our airways, like, okay, y'all say Colt Anderson needs to be replaced, and I'm not going to fight y'all with that. But outside the punts, and he can't control if a guy holds on to the ball or not. Eventually, they end up benching Jaquan Jackson. But when you watch special teams, it's all about alignment and assignment. I'm going to give you the alignment. I'm going to tell you what you need to do. If you show me those are the things you are capable of doing in practice, then okay, you can be out there. And I'm sure those are the things that they were able to do in practice. But then when you flip on the tape, you see guys doing something other than what they practice. That's not on Colt Anderson. I am, as a coach, I am tasked to go out there and teach you what I want you to know, put you in the best position to succeed. If you show me that in practice, then okay. Now it has to translate to the game. When it doesn't translate to in the game enough, then I got to make changes. Colt Anderson made changes, but those changes didn't work because then they were exposed on the other end. Okay, I got to put some more beefier guys up front to block for my kicker because he got his leg broke a year ago and he's got 2 punts blocked this year. Okay, I'm going to do that. But now what happens? Now I am exposed on the coverage end. Why? Because I don't have fast people to get down there to make the returner call for a fair catch. And I don't have the kicker that is going to put enough air underneath the ball to force him to do that. That's not on Colt Anderson. He made the necessary changes that he needed to make. But because this roster isn't where it needs to be, yeah, I can make changes here that may help, but it's going to expose me somewhere else. People, before y'all start talking about Colt Anderson, and I'm not advocating for Colt to lose his job or keep his job, but I'm just asking, especially the ones that talk about replacing him, go watch the tape. Just go watch all of the tape. And I am sure when you come back, you will tell me guys running out of their lane, guys missing some tackles, this and that. That's not on Colt Anderson. But if you want to fire him because those guys are doing it, then okay. One minute we say it's about the Jimmys and the Joes, but then the next minute when the Jimmys and the Joes ain't getting it done, we say, oh, it's about the X's and the O's, and it's about the coaching. Which one is it?
Trey is on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Trey, quickly, your question for Derek.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good, thank you.
Hey, what's going on?
Good. Hey, I heard Adam say that they were switching back to Will Levis.
Correct.
And I want to ask y'all, do y'all think that's a sign of instability to go back to Will Levis? You already know what he can do. I'm just asking, you know, I think it's a sign of instability from the top to the bottom. And I believe that everybody's going to be there next year, and they're going to dump everything out on the players. They're going to get rid of the players. And what y'all think? Thank you, and have a good day.
Trey, thank you. We're actually, that's a good question. Mm-hmm. Let's answer that on the other side. Derek Mason, Adam Vingid, 102.5, 106.3, the game.
Recently, our company softball team lost the big game by one run. Then Dale tried to console us with the quote, "Winning isn't everything." Dale's a loser. I play to win, like early payout from Bet365. If my team goes up big, I get paid out instantly, even if they blow the lead later.
Sound familiar, Dale?
Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
What's the most sustainable way to love fashion? It's changing the way you shop by shopping with The RealReal. The RealReal is the world's largest and most trusted source for authenticated luxury resale. When you shop with The RealReal, you'll find the luxury brands you love, like Prada, Celine, and Loewe, all for up to 90% off retail. And when you're ready to refresh your wardrobe, you can sell the pieces you no longer wear to fund your next new-to-you finds. Buy, sell, repeat. Guilt-free. The RealReal extends the life cycle of luxury by keeping coveted items in rotation. Sell to shop, shop to sell. With The RealReal, it's better for the planet and better for your closet. Plus, during Earth Month, you can earn $100 extra when you sell with The RealReal. Go to TheRealReal.com to get started. Earn $100 extra during the entire month of April at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.